Chapter 14. At precisely 11:30 a.m, the Reverend William Buckland lifted into midsummer air, smoothly and silently. Below its prow, the luxurious facilities of the 2020 tourist resort diminished. A cluster of glass-walled buildings surrounded by a sprawl of twain landing pads, and further out, the brilliant green absurdity of golf courses cut into the pine forests that dominated this footprint of southern England, here in Earth West 20,000. Nelson Azakiwe and Sister Agnes sat side by side in front of a big observation window, watching this panorama unfold. A discreet waitress had served tea on a small table before them, with a china service, a pot and cups, a platter of biscuits, small paper napkins. Agnes was dressed in a long black skirt, sensible shoes, and a pale pink cardigan over a white blouse. Her grey hair was cut short and neat. Nelson had never seen her wear a habit, and yet she seemed always to be in the shadow of the wimple, even now. Unconsciously, Nelson touched his own throat, the open neck of his shirt. Agnes, being Agnes, noticed this and laughed.
"Don't worry, Nelson. You still look like a vicar. You probably did even before you became one. But I don't think anybody here notices or cares, do you?"
Nelson glanced around at the other passengers. Many of them were the modern idle rich, mostly elderly couples sitting in silence together, dressed in the out-of-date and impractical pre-Yellowstone datum earth styles that had recently become a badge of disposable wealth. But it was their money that mostly kept this twain service in the air. In a corner sat a party of early teen students, with harassed teachers, probably on some kind of expensive ecology field trip out of a low-earth college. A few more earnest types, young adults, busily made notes and took images on tablets, even as the twain sailed over the golf courses and lakeside saunas, and Nelson and Agnes, the most enigmatic of all if anybody knew their personal stories, were receiving no attention at all.
"You're right, of course. Nobody sees anybody else," she twinkled.
"And nobody in all the low earths knows you have a secret grandson, Nelson. Nobody but me and Lapsang."
His heart thumped even now, months after he had had that mysterious automated phone call with his extraordinary news. The shadow of the twain crossed a clump of forest and startled a small herd of what looked like deer. Surprising to see them so close to the resort, Nelson thought. Maybe they were learning to scavenge garbage, another subtle modification of animal behaviour by humanity. And here he was thinking about anything except his unexpected new family. A grandson. Then the twain began to step. The deer were whisked out of existence. The splash of concrete and glass that was the resort obliterated, to be replaced by lakes and virgin forest. And then it changed again, and again, and again, a rippling of worlds that were soon passing at a rate of 1 a second or so, about the pace of a human heartbeat. The basic shape of the landscape endured. The river beside which the resort had been established, the contours of the hills of this remote footprint of southern England. But everything else was evanescent. Even the trees, the clumping of the pines, the distribution of the grassy plains between them. After a dozen steps, they passed out of sunshine into a world where a storm briefly battered the windows, and then out again. Blink and it was gone, like a dip of lights powered by a 40 post-Yellowstone power grid. Agnes sighed and pressed a finger to her temple.
"Are you all right, Agnes? I'm no stepper myself, but there are medications, at least for an old-fashioned meat-human like me. For you..."
"Oh, I'm fine. I'm no Joshua, but I could always step well enough with a box when I needed to. And when Lapsang, restored me, like some bit of old furniture he'd found in a dumpster, I found I'd become some kind of super-stepping, steely-eyed android. But I never enjoyed stepping very much."
She glanced at him.
"After all, what was the point? Everything I cared about, the people, It was all right where I was, at home. Although, of course, stepping can be good for the conscience, can't it? Which I believe is the idea behind this travel service you've helped set up.
The Buckland? Yes, I suppose it was my idea once I learned of the existence of the 2020 Centre, although I'm a small player in the commercial operation that came out of it. Have you noticed how worlds with neat round numbers always attract the big money facilities? Especially golf courses? I wish I'd thought of that on step day and bought up some property. And it did appeal to the founders of 2020 to run nature tours out of their resort. Everybody talks about Joshua and his adventures and the romance of the high megas, the very remote worlds. I'm no great stepper either, Agnes. And besides, I've always been drawn more to the nearby worlds, what they call the Ice Belt, worlds that are more or less like the Datum. More than 30,000 of them, to both east and west. I'm drawn to them precisely because they are like the Datum, our world.
But the Datum without human beings.
Indeed. Why, even here in Britain, in East and West One, you'll find the wolf and the brown bear and the lynx roaming, beasts who shared these isles with us as recently as the Bronze Age. A landscape without its big predators is unbalanced, a pathology. He smiled. You'll notice I did manage to smuggle in a reference to a hero of mine.
The ship's name, you mean? William Buckland. Never heard of him.
A churchman and a naturalist, early 19th century, and a diluvian. Even as the first fossils were being dug up, and as the geologists were starting to get a handle on how the world really works, Buckland continued to argue for the reality of Noah's flood. But the thing with Buckland was that he stuck to the evidence, a perfect example of the tension between religion and science.
Rather like Lapsang, Agnes said, that Tibetan Buddhist core within a high-technology body.
Buckland himself found the very first dinosaur bone of all, you know, Agnes, of a Megalosaurus here in Britain, in Oxfordshire. Well, a party from the Natural History Museum went out. They had to go beyond the gap, I think, and found something very like an extant Megalosaurus, brought home a clutch of eggs, and now they run wild in a reserve in London West 3. The chicks are almost cute. But all that's for others to explore.
Agnes peered down, distracted again by the scenery. Nelson saw that the flickering landscapes below were becoming more sparse now, those here-and-gone pine tree clumps few and far between. The twain slowed subtly, lingering in the air of one particular world for a few seconds. Huge forms, hairy, a deep mud-brown colour, moved across the landscape like the shadows of clouds. Once the passengers had been given time for a good look and a few photos, the stepping resumed, and the animal herd was whisked away. Agnes sat back.
Were they mammoths?
I think so. Agnes, the ice-belt worlds aren't identical. Some are more frozen than others. Here, as at the 2020 resort, the climate is like southern Scandinavia, that is, Datum Scandinavia, before Yellowstone messed up the climate. But around West 17,000, we'll hit a sheaf of more heavily glaciated worlds. Tundra, where the only trees are willows clinging to the ground, and the big animals are mammoths and musk ox and woolly rhinos.
Not much to see, I imagine.
You can be lucky, but it's a sparse terrain. The interglacial worlds, where the ice has retreated for a time, are more spectacular. Lions and hippos and elephants.
I guess England is a more interesting place than I ever imagined.
Nelson smiled.
Well, not that interesting. It was good of you to come all this way to see me. I would have come out to you.
Oh, I didn't mind adding another date to what I'm thinking of as a farewell tour. And I did have an ulterior motive, as you know. It was good of you to show me the material you found on Joshua's family history, his father's side. It does help me understand that poor boy and his family after all this time.
That boy, Nelson reflected wistfully, was now 68 years old. Agnes said,
I did try to find the father, you know, when Joshua was growing up. I know he was wary of us sisters. Well, now he's died, taking his story with him. From what Joshua told me, I think Freddie managed to be proud of his son, in the end. So he did leave a legacy, of sorts, despite the awful circumstances of Joshua's birth.
She eyed him. Just as you will, it seems, Nelson.
You rogue.
Nelson felt as if his face was glowing hot.
Now, Agnes, this isn't the kind of thing to tease me about.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sure that answering machine message from Lobsang was a heck of a shock.
So it was.
And when you contacted me, asking if I knew anything about this mysterious grandson of yours, I got a shock of my own. Lobsang never just vanishes, you see. That's not his style. He leaves me little gifts around the place, in the systems, in my home, even in my tablet. Files that pop open, given a particular trigger, such as an association of your name with the word grandson. I'll have a few seconds or minutes with some avatar of the man, sometimes long enough for a conversation. Joshua calls them Easter eggs for some reason.
An old computer game term.
She frowned disapprovingly.
Well, it's no game to me to get such news.
Nelson leaned forward intent.
All I know is that I have a grandson, and while my life has hardly been blameless, I can only think of one occasion where I might have... Did Lobsang mention Earth-West 700,000 or thereabouts?
Now she smiled.
Actually, he did. Then you know where to find them.
Them?
Your grandson and your son.
That took him aback.
Shallow fool that I am, I focused on the grandson. I didn't think of a daughter or a son.
She leaned over and rested her hand on his. Her ambulant unit's artificial flesh was comfortingly warm.
There are no rules with this kind of thing, Nelson. You just have to find your way through.
For all I eschew long stepwise jaunts, I must go to them.
Of course you must. And you must come back and tell me all about it, if I'm still here. Oh, sorry.
She squeezed his hand again. Didn't mean to be as blunt as that. He sat back.
I did hear about your plans from mutual friends. Your plans to die.
From Joshua?
Sister John at the home, actually. We keep in touch.
He wondered what to say. In his years as a clergyman, he had, of course, had many conversations on this topic, but never with an entity like Sister Agnes.
This is something you need to do.
What's the alternative?
She smiled at him quite brightly.
Don't be sad, Nelson. It's already over 100 years since I was born. I've had a far richer life, or lives, than I could ever have imagined, or deserve, probably.
He snorted.
I won't accept that.
Now I just want it all to have a tidy ending.
She thought that over and nodded.
Yes, that's it. Tidy. And you could help me with that, dear Nelson.
Of course. How?
Help them. Anybody who misses me. Anybody who cares.
Such as Joshua.
She smiled.
I can't think of anybody better to ask.
It's this invisible dog collar around my neck, isn't it?
Once donned, you're stuck with it, I'm afraid.
And what about Lobsang?
Oh, I've already said goodbye to him. Or at least, to his Easter eggs.
Now below, the glaciations were taking hold, with the landscape altering as they stepped between tundra and an open polar desert, where winds blew ice crystals across frozen ground.
Like in the song, Agnes murmured, winter's without end.
Sister?
I think I might go have a nap. Old lady's privilege.
Shall I wake you for lunch?
She smiled as she stood.
Certainly. I couldn't miss the lions and the hippos you promised me. Oh, one more thing. Troy. Troy is his name, your grandson. Remember me to him.
I will, Agnes. Thank you.